Okay. All right. So let's get started with the official part of it. An insider's guide to desktop virtualization. A very warm welcome to everybody of you. I'm Benny Tritch. Ruben's proud. He's going to introduce himself in a couple of seconds. And we are very excited to be here. Very honest, because we invested a lot of work over this year to put the material together. It's going to be the last time this year that we co-present a session, so it's the end of the year session for us, so it's really great. Good. Warm welcome. My name, as I said, is Benny Tritch. I'm from Germany. Why is that important? Well, it's not going to be a funny session from my side. He's responsible for the fun part. And I love my lab. I like hanging out with the geeks, like here on this picture is Sean Bass. And together with me, I like scuba diving, I like guitars, I like a good barbecue. This was one of the pictures that we took when we had a barbecue together. And I work for BlueQ. I'm CTO at BlueQ, which is a consulting company in Germany, in the German-speaking market. And, well, this is about it.
And this is about me. I like mojitos to celebrate success. Today is my 16th anniversary, so I'll fly home tonight and have probably a mojito at home. Love barbecuing as well, traveling a lot. This is a picture in Japan. Did some sessions in Japan, was awesome. Love steaks and love fireworks and airplanes. And I'm the CTO of a company called PQR. We are a system integrator and based in the Netherlands. And together with Benny, I'm an MVP and a Citrix CTP and also a VMware V expert.
Oh, you said the bad word, the V word.
V-expert, you mean?
Oh, yeah, Cap.
So the objectives for this session are four different things. First one is understanding VDY and avoid VDCry. Benny will cover understanding graphics concepts with different four apps, as he explained. I will do the overview of different solutions and pros and cons of different solutions, VMware, Citrix, and Microsoft. And together we do the notes from the field, things we see implementing, desktop virtualization, VDI, virtual desktop infrastructure, server-based computing projects. So when I start, I see quite some challenges happening in the industry. We as IT pros are quite often perceived as the department of Dr. No. The time to market, the speed of innovation and new technology is ramping up really fast. Business consumers, end users want to have any access to anything, any application, any device. Well, you can fill in the anys. Business demands maybe not perfection, but progression. So speeding up things. About speed and impact, I can create this diagram because this illustrates the time where we are in right now. The impact, the magnitude, and the velocity of all types of developments. Look at Azure, for instance, or Office 365 and the developments in that space. That is infecting me directly as a CTO. It's impacting directly in my organization and my clients. And the main question is, okay, what can I do with all this type of new technologies? How can I benefit from that? That is a big challenge. So what is your challenge? I spoke to a couple of people. And I would love to spend more time with you in understanding your challenges. But probably the challenges are a couple of things. Could be technology-driven, could be business-driven, could be operational challenges. How do you solve these challenges? But first of all, in understanding to solve these challenges, it's really important to understand who is the end user, who is the business consumer. What are his or her demands? An end user is a terrific name which fits in the Windows XP days. Today, the business consumer is, from my perspective, the right name to use because, the end user has a different perspective on how to get access to IT services and, the IT services in general. More from a consumer perspective. So business consumer are merged. That's why I call it business consumer. And this business consumer wants to have a great workspace. Workspace is something you need to get work done. Could be unified communications, is collaboration, social collaboration, application and desktop delivery, all types of things. And with that, we need a data center as well. And data center could be cloud, could be on-premises, off-premise, could be mixed. You understand the story. But it starts with business consumers.
Yeah, but a surprising fact is that security is certainly part of the list here.
Yes.
So many people regard VDI as a security solution. Yep. Well, it's not.
Exactly. So tomorrow's
you can use it as a starting point to build more secure environments, but not per se VDI is security.
Exactly. So tomorrow's workspace and VDI and industrial virtualization in general is part of that, is to enable business consumers to be productive with the device they love. That's the essence of tomorrow's workspace. Why is that important? To get a satisfied business consumer. That's the essence of challenges and solving these challenges. Tomorrow's workspace, from my perspective, are six different topics. And we will do a deeper dive in topic number four called application and desktop delivery. The essence of application and desktop delivery is how do I bring Windows, web, or software as a service applications, and mobile applications and all type of flavors, how do I bring these applications to my business consumers? That is application and desktop delivery. And desktop virtualization is a segment to get these type of applications to my business consumers. Keep in mind that when we talk about VDI, or Microsoft specifically solutions, or VMware, or Citrix, that the product is not the goal at all. Quite often, even internal within PKR, we have this type of discussions. That okay, this is the solution for X, but what's the problem? Well, we need to sort it out. That's the wrong approach. So product is not equal to goal. And that's the entry point to VDI. Why desktop virtualization? Why VDI? Well, there are a couple of things. Access from anywhere, high-performance workspace, security is part of that conversation. It's not a secure solution by design,
nope.
But it can help in delivering Windows and web applications to any device
yep.
in a more secure way.
Absolutely.
Data is centralized, so execution, Windows applications and data, bring it together will overall be a great user experience. When you separate that, and my data is in India, and my execution is in Amsterdam, well, we know, we've been in this industry for a couple of years, or more than a couple of years, that when you separate data and execution, you will get into challenges. Support bring your own device and corporate-owned, personally enabled, COPY, corporate-owned, personally enabled, is part of the VDI story. Easier for disaster recovery, with, for instance, remote app in mind, or desktop as a service in mind, it's easier to build disaster recovery workspace scenarios. Reducing costs, well,
it's hard.
It's always part of the conversation. We want to use desktop virtualization to reduce costs. Well, you know it as well, right? It's not so easy to answer that question, okay, do VDI with vendor X, and then you'll reduce costs. I hate these type of conversations. And one of our friends, Brian Madden, wrote an interesting article a couple of years ago, how vendors lie with TCO and ROI calculators. It's a really interesting blog post.
Yep.
So just search for Brian Madden ROI TCO calculator and you will find that blog post for sure. It's really interesting to check it out. And ergonomics could be a scenario, think lines was mentioned there. No heat and noise under the desk. Well, I see scenarios where VDI fits, or desktop virtualization in general fits for sure. When we did a survey half year ago, and we is Project VRC, Virtual Reality Check, 845 people filled in and completed the survey. And we asked the question, okay, what's the most important reason to use VDI? Well, as you can see, this resonates with the story I mentioned before. Centralized managed is one of the key drivers here. Support flex working as well. Let's shift gears to the VDCry section. Why is this important? Well, when we do projects, we face also the cry portion quite often. And it's important to educate, our coworkers, ourselves as well, and also, you try to educate you to avoid these cry scenarios. What are the VDCry scenarios? Well, it's about end user experience and all types of things. And also admin experience. These two needs to be connected. But first of all, it starts with end user experience because that's directly connected to the business consumer. What is the end user experience when I use a Xero client or a Linux Thin client? Does it impact the end user experience? The answer is yes. What happens if I have multiple screens and a El Cheapo Xero client? Does it impact the end user experience? Yes. Does it mean that this is a user scenario? No. But the main question is, what is the perceived performance in such conversations? So proof of concepts with business consumers connected is very important. Unified communications is VDCry as well. Why? Well, there's a big challenge called hairpinning effect. Google for hairpinning effect and unified communications. Combine it with desktop virtualization, and you will get the point. So unified communications, last 2 weeks, I had 4 conversations with 4 different customers who want to implement Google Hangout or Microsoft Link. And the main question is, how does it work with VDI? Does it work? Can it work? Is it supported? Well, it depends. It depends on a lot of things. That's the biggest challenge here. Perceived performance, we as IT pros can do a brilliant job. But when it doesn't meet the expectations, yep, we're still in trouble. That's what's called perceived performance. So communication and managing expectations in these types of projects, also if you're moving to Azure Remote App, all these things apply. Impact on networking, latency, bandwidth, well, we're in the space in the early WinFrame days. So this is
yep. Yeah. And that's something that I will cover when I do the protocol comparison.
And overall, licensing is a big challenge. Licensing, Microsoft licensing, is a challenge. But overall, ISV licensing and VDI, and when you combine it with bring your own device, it's really a big challenge. Questions like, who owns the device? Is it on-premises or off-premises? Is it a company-owned device? All these type of things are part of this whole licensing challenge and discussion. So to help you understanding licensing better, we spent a couple of days in creating an awesome flowchart to explain licensing.
It's very simple.
So just print this out, bring this to your manager, or when you're the manager, well, enjoy life, and then understand how Microsoft licensing works.
Now, as you can see, this is just fun, but this is the real thing.
This is the real thing. So licensing and Windows, these are the software assurance, VDAs, different licensing formats. We won't cover all the details around licensing. That's not really sexy. But it's important to understand that licensing is a challenge. And you need to be aware of it.
I mean, this includes very funny things, like if your user brings a device to work, it's a different license when he is on-prem as if he's not on-prem. So what happens if he enters the door of your enterprise? How do you track that?
Yes.
So it's really complicated.
Yep. I've seen a couple of examples in real-world scenarios where licensing, where the answer was, well, we have an enterprise agreement, so we are okay. And then the whole bring your own device discussion and VDI in a broader sense come into play. And then, well, maybe we should talk to the Microsoft sales guys and see if we are really compliant. You need to have that type of conversation up front in the design phase instead of the almost implementation phase. Well, is this all VDCry? Nope. There's a big chunk around Cry. It's called storage. I can spend 75 minutes around storage in VDI. I won't do that. In the early days, the challenge was, what is the biggest challenge? Read-write ratio, latency, rate penalties, rate 1, rate 5, all these kind of things. Right now, the biggest challenge is, well, there are 101 options to choose from a storage perspective. What is the right solution? That is a challenge today. One of my coworkers, Herco, he spent a lot of time in writing down this topic. So when you're interested, at the end of the deck, I will have a call to action to this type of content to make life easier for you to get access to that kind of content. So it's not only about IOPS, keep that in mind. It's about capacity from an IOPS perspective and capacity from a terabyte, gigabyte, petabyte perspective. And that should be in balance. And then the discussion about stateless and stateful, pooled and persistent, VDI desktops is part of this conversation as well. Application virtualization with AppVee is part of this conversation as well. So storage is a big chunk of the VDCry section. And as I explained, there are a lot of vendors in this space. So we shift gears. I explain VDOI and VDCry. Try to, well, to pinpoint some topics and to create an overview of that. Now we move further to graphics concepts and graphics and desktop virtualization. Why is it important? Well, everyone in this room has a PC, a laptop, and a tablet. And graphics, this PC has a GPU. When we move our applications to a virtual desktop infrastructure, this GPU will disappear or will be in emulator format. And that could have impact in the end user experience. Well, as of today, you're able to use GPUs in desktop virtualization in different flavors. Benny will cover that. And that will help the perceived performance and the user experience heavily. Not only for high-end graphics, but also for Office and Windows in general. There are a lot of choices in this arena. Benny will cover that again.
Yep.
But keep in mind, I started with, when you have challenges, the first answer is, okay, what is the business consumer? What are the demands for him or her? And it's important to differentiate different users in organizations. So use a scenario with graphics and desktop virtualization in mind. Power users, knowledge workers, task workers, with different demands, with different concepts to help deliver applications to these user scenarios. I see in a weekly basis, not on a daily basis, graphics for virtual desktop use cases. Do a couple of projects right now where constructing organizations demand high-end graphics, anywhere access, data centralized. Aerospace, one Dutch company, I'm involved in that. Medical, not so much. Benny is involved in that.
Yeah, I have a customer that asked for help in a medical scenario because they have a linear accelerator to treat cancer, and they want to do the surgery planning, and for that they want to use remote graphics, which makes a lot of sense because the linear accelerator typically is far away from the patient and is far away from the planning place. And so they have both physicists and doctors working on that. And so they want to use remoting. And that's not only one place. That is different places that have this requirement. And as you can imagine, automotive is a big thing in Germany. And so we have projects there. And we know that there are already very successful projects out there. And now there are all these manufacturers for all the individual pods that really want to get into that game. Their problem is that they need all the CAD CAM software that all the car manufacturers are using because they don't only deliver their pods to one manufacturer, they are delivering to many of them. So it's extremely hard for them to build such environments, and so they are trying to consolidate that and virtualize those environments. So these are very, very interesting and attractive projects. I have one project in construction where it's about knocking down bridges and building them fast over the highway, over the German Autobahn. And this is they have very strict deadlines. And so they're using mobile devices to find out what the scenario is on the construction site and then send this data back to the planning office. And they do the remodeling of the bridge if they find a big rock or something that they can't get rid of. So they change the plan and they send back the results. And these workers, they work interactively with a tablet in order to build that bridge in time. So these were scenarios that I never had in my head before these people came to me and were talking about that kind of scenarios. So, as I said, there are so many apps out there that you can use. So this is only like an overview of all these applications that we see in the market. And the funny thing is, you see CATIA on one side and you see Office on the other side. So as Ruben mentioned earlier, it's not only about the CAD CAM applications. As soon as you find out, wow, look at that, if we use remoting and we use accelerated remoting, there's a lot of stuff that you can do with the standard applications. And this is something that we want to look at. It's extremely hard to find out these applications or to get these applications from the vendors because we want to use them for testing. And I will do a session tomorrow, an entire session about building test labs for that. I hope this is in the application. So it's going to be at noon. I think it's also in this room here, 12 o'clock tomorrow in this room. And it's about building the test labs for creating those four ups that I have with me. So we do it now since 5 years. It took us 5 years to come to this point where we are now.
when you look at all the applications, the question we receive quite often, okay, what is the resource uses of this application?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes it's helpful to use applications like Lakeside Software or LiquidWell Apps to investigate the application landscape in your organization and to analyze what is the resource usage, also from a GPU perspective, and use that information to, well, to make certain buckets. Okay, this application is really heavy on storage and less heavy on GPU, therefore Concept X is the best solution. So LiquidWell Apps and Lakeside Software are two vendors who can be helpful in investigating these applications.
Good. Now let's really dig into the architecture. So now we're going to move from level 200 more to 300, 400. So the thing is that we have different ways of using graphics, in particular physical GPUs. And what we will be covering now is using physical GPUs to accelerate graphics remoting or multimedia remoting. So we have Direct Map, which is having a physical graphics card on a bare metal system, like a PC that sits in front of you, the typical graphics workstation.
Or Blade PC.
Or Blade PC, which you find now. So we have software graphics, which is interesting, because you use the CPU to emulate a GPU. GPU, the graphics processing unit. We have shared GPU, which means that multiple virtual machines have access to a physical GPU that is in the hypervisor. Then we have GPU pass-through, which is a direct connection for each VM to an individual GPU. And we have what is called GPU virtualization, a little bit more complex, and I will cover that in detail going to the architectural charts and graphs, and then show you the example. So this is where the four ups kick in. So bare metal direct map, it's very simple. You can do that at home. If you have a Windows 8.1 machine and you connect to this machine through another Windows 8.1 machine, it uses RemoteFX for the communication. So you can use the RDP client connecting into another physical machine. This is what many people do at home, what they do at work. And then it uses one of the protocols. On the Microsoft side is RemoteFX, we have Citrix HDX, we have Teradici PC over IP, we have HP RGS, so there are many protocols out there. And the desktop manager is able to interact with the remote machine. And the underlying operating system, it has connectivity to all the physical devices. So this is the daily work that we do if we remote into the physical machine. Now, what if we use software graphics? So here we introduce the hypervisor. The hypervisor is the base, and on top of the hypervisor we have the VMs. So it could be either Microsoft Remote Desktop Virtualization Host, formerly called VDI, or any of the other vendors that are out there. And you host a Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8.8, Windows 10 machine on this hypervisor, and then you remote into these virtual machines, again using RemoteFX, HDX, PC over IP. Not very spectacular. It's important to note that the hypervisor owns the drivers to the hard disk, to the NIC, to the network card, to the graphics card. So the hypervisor controls access to the hardware, to the physical hardware. And this makes things very interesting. Now let's just go and take a look at some of these videos. And you see that I'm using here on the upper left side a bare metal system based on using a K5000 high-end graphics card. So it's a graphics workstation. On the upper right side, it's PC over IP. So it is a VMware solution. Oh, I also said that word. And lower left, it's RemoteFX vGPU using Windows 8. So this is the Microsoft solution. And on the right, lower, you see HDX, Citrix. And all is in software. Well, you see, performance is pretty much identical. It's really hard to differentiate if something is physical or remoted. This is the good news. So if we start using a little bit more complex applications, you see, fail. And I mean, they all fail. And you see, now they not all fail. This is interesting. It's a DirectX application. So Microsoft was always good supporting DX applications. But both VMware and Citrix fail supporting that in a soft GPU scenario. But you see, there's a huge difference between the physical box, the bare metal box, and the software GPU. So this is massive. I don't have that one. So let's move on and go to sharing GPUs. So the idea of a shared GPU or API intercept is we're still running everything on a hypervisor, but this time we allow the synthetic driver that is in the VM to access the physical GPU that is controlled by the hypervisor. So you see, the hypervisor owns the GPU-specific driver, and only what the synthetic driver in the VM allows to do, what it does as a redirection mechanism, goes down to the GPU. In the past, Microsoft was struggling with OpenGL, for example. So if you install integration services in a VM that runs on Hyper-V, this is exactly this driver that captures all API calls and redirects them. If some of the formats are not supported natively, so you see the error message. This was changed with Windows 10. So now Microsoft supports that. But this is the general problem with this kind of concept. If the generic driver does not support a particular graphics format, you will see the error messages in pretty much the same way as we saw that with software GPU. And you see that Citrix is doing this shared concept or API intercept concept a little bit differently because they allow to install the driver in the VM, the native driver in the VM, but only for CNAPP, only for the terminal server or RDSH scenario. So Citrix wants to make clear that there is a difference in the way they're sharing the GPU and VMware and Microsoft are doing that, because the previous slide showed you the way like Microsoft and VMware are doing that. Now, we are here at Tiqit, so we want to take a deeper look at how the Microsoft technology looks like. Well, at the beginning, we're going to take a look at what happened here? Is that true? We take a look at RemoteFX, soft GPU on the left side, and we're going to continue RemoteFX with vGPU on Win 7. We're going to take further on a look at RemoteFX vGPU on Win 8 and vGPU on Windows 10. So what you see here is the soft GPU clearly falls behind. Now we start using a physical GPU, and you see how it improves from Win 7 to Win 8 to Win 10. I want to stop it just for a brief moment. I want you to take a look at the numbers, at the frame rates that are displayed here. And you see that the frame rate obviously is higher with Windows 7 than it is with Windows 8, but the perceived performance is still obviously a little bit better on the Windows 8 side and even much better on the Windows 10 side. So only using the frame rate is not the only option that you can do in order to judge the perceived performance. This is why we recorded all these videos. As I said, over the last 5 years, we recorded roughly 5,000 videos installing all these different scenarios in our labs using standard hardware, either white label machines that we built together or R720s by Dell. So Dell was so friendly to give us R720s, and NVIDIA gave us K1s and K2 cards and K5000 cards in order to build those reference environments, and they allow us to do that kind of testing. Good. So let's take a look at the same spectrum now. And you see, here we got an OpenGL application. And as I said earlier, Microsoft invested heavily into supporting OpenGL with Windows 10. So on the lower right side, you see one of those OpenGL applications, while the others, they throw an error message. And this is also part of the user experience, because when the user double clicks an application icon and all he gets is an error message, yeah, this is a user experience, but it's a bad user experience.
Yeah.
And that is the thing that many users complain about. And if you look at the lower right, it works nicely. So now, what I've done here, I took the Windows 10 scenario, and instead of testing it over the LAN, I started constraining the network. In my lab, I have a WAN emulator, a deposit box, and this allows me to introduce network conditions that constrain the network bandwidth and introduce latency. So on the upper right, you see 8 megabit 50 milliseconds. Lower left, you see 2 megabit 50 milliseconds. And lower right, 8 megabit 200 milliseconds. And one of the things that we learned is that not only if you reduce the bandwidth, you start modifying the user experience. Also, if you introduce latency, that is a big challenge. At certain points, we could even add more bandwidth. If there is too much latency, the performance will not get any better. So I will show some pictures later that demonstrate that in a bit more detail.
So to find the answer, how much bandwidth do I need?
It is a really, really, really hard question, because again, here it's a DirectX application that I'm using. Again, using it on the LAN, then 8 megabit, 50 milliseconds. What we found is that the sweet spot for many of those high-end scenarios is 8 megabit and less than 50 milliseconds latency, because you see, if you have only the 2 megabit, almost nothing happens. It's really staggering. And the same is going to happen with the 8 megabit, 200 milliseconds. See? So suddenly it stops. Obviously, it runs out of buffer. And that makes the user experience very, very poor. Even that one here starts staggering at a certain point. But hey, keep in mind, this is a very, very early beta. So we are talking about Windows 10 running on a server technology preview. And both the VM and the client were Windows 10, which is only out for a couple of days. So I did this test like 2 weeks ago. So I was very happy to see those results, because they clearly show in the right direction. But you cannot take that as the final code. So I believe that performance will still improve massively. But it was really, really great to see that Microsoft finally decided that they want to support OpenGL. Good. Let's move on to GPU pass-through. It's a dedicated GPU, as I said earlier. You're able to, you sort of punch a hole in the hypervisor, and the VM has direct access to the PCI bus where the graphics card lives. This is a dangerous technology, because if the driver that lives in the VM tries to write to the wrong places in the memory space, like it sort of overwrites those places where it's supposed to write or read from, then the underlying OS will not tolerate that, which means on a Windows side, it will generate a blue screen. On the VMware ESX side, it generates a purple screen. So when I did very early tests with this technology on ESX, I was actually able to create a purple screen by only manipulating a graphics driver in a VM. That was very surprising, and it took VMware, and Citrix is doing the same, it took them a long time to engineer these things so that this can literally not happen anymore. But Microsoft is very hesitant of doing that. So we had long conversations with the Microsoft team, the product teams about that. And they said, hey, it's all about stability for our hypervisor. So punching holes in our hypervisor and allowing a third-party driver to have direct access to some hardware, this is dangerous. And I agree with them. So they're trying to find out other solutions. It's very interesting to see that, how the different vendors are acting in the market. So it's very clear that Citrix and VMware are a lot more aggressive in this market in order to win market shares, while Microsoft says it's all about the stability of our hypervisor platform. Now, this is the reason why demonstrating that kind of scenarios is more looking at the non-Microsoft solutions. Now, if you see here a bare metal on Intel Core i7, here we have the K5000 graphical workstation. Down here, I also used the Microsoft shared GPU just to compare to what Citrix can do with their pass-through GPU. So you see, it starts really fast. So obviously, it's able to take advantage of the high-end graphics card. And now look at that. Upper left is bare metal, Core i7. It's a laptop. It's my HP laptop here, a mobile workstation. It includes an NVIDIA mobile graphics card. But still, from a performance perspective, it clearly falls behind. The remoting scenario, let's just go back a little bit and do that again. Down here, you have much better user experience than you have up here. And it comes very close to the high-end graphics workstation. We recorded that about a year and a half ago, and it was the first time that VDI remoting was able to beat bare metal, a machine that costs a couple of thousand euros that is standing in front of me. And I remoted into the VDI environment from the same machine and recorded it on the same machine. And the performance was much better through the VDI scenario than it was when I ran the same applications, the same application locally. That was amazing. That was the first time. On the left side, lower left side, you saw that, oh, even the Microsoft solution is a little bit better than the bare metal because it uses the K2 graphics card and it can clearly benefit of the graphics power from the physical GPU. So that was a great result that we were collecting. Now, coming back to what Ruben said earlier, what is the impact that we see on a GPU when we are using one of those high-end applications? And this is why we were running a monitoring tool, upper right side, side by side with the bare metal system. And we were able to find out that it consumes roughly 25 to 30% of the GPU capacity. Now, this answers the question, how many VMs can I assign to an individual GPU until the GPU cannot provide any graphics performance anymore. So in this case, you would be able to bring three virtual machines together and use one GPU, and then it would be saturated. Unfortunately, the pass-through GPU can't do that. So you're dedicating a full GPU, a very expensive 2,000 euro GPU, to one VM, and it can only use 33% in this high-end scenario. If we are running Office, like PowerPoint application, and some nice PowerPoint presentation in there, it's roughly 5%. So you could get 20 users on one GPU, but if you have a dedicated pass-through GPU, it's only that one user that consumes these 5%. This is not so good from a cost perspective. This is why we tried out to start three of the same scenario on one GPU. We did this test, and you can see that it almost did not degrade the quality. But in this moment, we are using 100% of one GPU, and that gives that kind of result. So the pass-through GPU seems not to be the thing that we want to use if we want to scale up. So this is going to be too expensive. This is the reason why NVIDIA, they were the first ones who said, we want to kind of virtualize the GPU. They call it grid vGPU. Do not confuse it with remote FX vGPU. Both Microsoft and NVIDIA are using this vGPU acronym, but it's not the same thing. Please keep that in mind. It's very important. Because what the NVIDIA grid vGPU does is they introduce a broker in the hypervisor. Plus, they use a native driver in each individual VM. Before the graphics driver in the VM connects to the physical graphics card, it talks to the broker. The broker basically is a load balancer, and it assigns resources. So you can define the amount of VRAM, video RAM, that is assigned to each individual VM, and it makes sure that it's a fair share regarding the GPU cycles. So you can limit the number of users that are using a GPU. So like, okay, this user gets 25% of the physically available VRAM plus no more than four users on this machine. So on this GPU, not more than four VMs that have access to that particular physical GPU, meaning that the fifth user will not be able to use that GPU, but the other four users, they have the capacity they got assigned to. And that is the idea of the vGPU concept. Again, let's take a look at the results. Again, bare metal. And then we have different flavors of this vGPU scenario running on SenServer and with Citrix, because Citrix was the first manufacturer, the first vendor to implement this technology together with NVIDIA. So NVIDIA came and they delivered the component that lives in the SenServer hypervisor, this broker component. And they updated their drivers that live in the VM so that they communicate with the broker. So this is the result. And the interesting thing is, if we only run one session, it's, again, almost you can't say what is what. What we see is, if we start adding users and if we are constraining the VRAM, then it takes much longer to load an application because, well, it is not so much space in memory for the application, so it takes longer to load because it has to swap and all the kind of, more expensive things. And but as soon as it starts, performance is great. Now, you add more users and you find those limitations. If you have a scenario that allows you to use up to four VMs per physical GPU, the performance with that will degrade massively. So this is what we learned when we started implementing that. Now, what I did here is I wanted to see how good is the Microsoft vGPU, which is shared, which is an uncontrolled shared, compared to the Citrix NVIDIA implementation. And you see down here, this is the bandwidth that is required for this scenario. If you can't read the number, yes, this means 30 megabit per second. So it really takes all it gets. Citrix with HDX is a little bit more efficient. So it's it's around 6 megabit, 7 megabit. So it does not use as much of a bandwidth. So this is interesting. And the other thing that you learn here, again, is with the frame rates. So don't trust frame rates, because it's not the frame rates that you see on the client side. Probably it's the frame rates that were, the number of frames that were rendered on the host side. Now, if we start constraining that network, things get interesting, because now you see that the Microsoft implementation, and we are talking about Windows 7 here, and you know that Windows 8 and Windows 10 are much better here, but we did that in order to be able to head-to-head compare the Citrix and the Microsoft side. So you see that the Microsoft side is struggling. Even if we gave it 8 megabit, it cannot use more than 4 megabit because of the latency. And Citrix, they can deal much better with the constraints. Now, you see here, it's the frame rates, and they indicate that this performance is much better. But you can see visually that the performance on the right side is much better, even though the frame rate indicates that it's not. So this is why it's so important to record those videos and take a look at them. And the last thing is having two 100 milliseconds latency. And now you see vGPU on Windows 7 is really struggling. And while Citrix is still able to provide a pretty good user experience, and I'm really looking forward to see the final code of Windows 10 and server technology preview, because I expect it to be much better than it was with Windows 7, because Microsoft massively modified the underlying graphics stack starting in Windows 8 and Windows 8.1, and they are working on that for Windows 10 now. So this is interesting stuff that's going to happen as soon as they ship the final bits for Windows 10. So this is only an overview how the implementation was done from NVIDIA. You see all these NVIDIA elements and components that had to go into the system. And this is a reason, again, why Microsoft is kind of hesitant to do that with Hyper-V, because it would require to really open Hyper-V and allow third parties to install kernel mode drivers. This is really critical. Now the question is, what is the right solution?
Yes, I started with business consumer first, and then, well, creating different segments, power user, knowledge worker, information worker. And combine that information with information many shared around different graphics concepts. Then the main question is, okay, what is the right solution? Is it soft GPU, is it vGPU, is it bare metal, is it API intercept? Well, it depends on what's the demand. Is it really high performance? Well, probably bare metal is the solution, or pass-through GPU solution. Or in some scenarios, vGPU with a high vGPU profile could be a solution. Yep. Is API support really important, and is application certification really important? The 260Q, for instance, profile, the Q stands for Quadro, and that means that there are certain certification inside this VM, so NVIDIA certification.
Yeah, that's an NVIDIA certification, and they ask the application vendors to pass that certification, and then they make sure that it runs on these platforms.
Not so important for Office,
nope.
But when I'm running CATIA, which costs a lot of money, then you want to have application certification, yep, as well. So what is the right solution? Well, investigate if it's high performance, is API support important? What is API support for these applications? OpenGL, OpenCL, DirectX, CUDA, is that important? What does the application use? And then connect that to the information Benny shared. That's how the process works. when we talk about API support, it's handy not to talk and just make some pictures or download the deck. It's important to understand, again, what does the application need from an API perspective.
So here you see the difference. If you look at RDVH, Win 7, Win 8 with Remote FX, and then we have RDVH on server technology preview with Windows 10 also using Remote FX. You see all these yes things that have not been here before. But you also see that all the other vendors, on the left side it's Citrix, on the right side it's VMware, they all have their limitations. And I can tell you, none of the vendors likes this slide. Nobody. Because their sales force, they say it's disruptive for their sales force, for obvious reasons. Because if you show that the customer before and you use one of those applications that Ruben mentioned to find out what are the APIs that my applications are using, you have all the information you need to make a smart choice. Now, sales sometimes tries to sell you stuff before you made this assessment, so the money flows, and hey, unfortunate, your most important application is not supported. So please, please, please do that kind of assessment before.
We spend a lot of time in investigating this, all these technologies, recording videos, writing down some white papers and books. And we is obvious Benny and me, but there's another guy involved as well. His name is Sean Bass, and he is also part of Team RGE, Team Remote Graphics Experts. And our goal is just to share information as we try to do right now.
So the book that I gave away, and we have more of those, this was created. It's a white paper, and it turned out to be a book. This is what Team RGE did together. So we'll cover that later.
Interesting questions after our session.
Yeah.
We will give away to...
And you can download it for free. So it's a free download.
So the third one is overview pros and cons of different solutions. Benny did a deep dive in graphics. I started with an overview around VDI and VDCry. Now let's compare some solutions. We have around 23 minutes left. I can talk for 3 hours around this topic. So that's
Please do it in 15 minutes, so that would be
exactly.
Great.
First of all, gave an overview around landscape for server-hosted desktops. In this picture, you can see that NVIDIA, AMD, and Intel, these are the three GPU manufacturers. And right now, NVIDIA and also AMD, in certain graphic scenarios, are the leaders in GPU and desktop virtualization. HP, Teradici, Dell with EOP, or Quest V Workspace EOP, Citrix, VMware, Microsoft, NICE, and also NVIDIA have all their have their remoting graphics protocol. What's the difference between these? Well, a lot of differences. Multi-monitor support, Linux guest OS support, collaboration within VDI environments. All these type of scenarios could be part of the differentiators between these vendors. Amazon, Otoy, and Mainframe are listed here. Why? Because they deliver application as a service, as remote app is delivering application as a service. I like the name, remote app, by the way. Sometimes they deliver desktop as a service for high-end graphics. So Amazon is the platform. In Amazon, I have instances where I can use a GPU instance. Azure right now is lacking in that space. And this GPU instance on Amazon is being used by Otoy and Mainframe 2 to deliver high-end graphics applications as a service. That is a differentiator there. On the VDI side, there's a lot of movement here because this is a picture with a lot of logos. And when I use this picture right now, you see that there's quite some movement in this space.
Some of the vendors disappeared because they were acquired.
Exactly. So there's a lot of movement here. But in essence, this whole VDI space is dominated by two-ish, maybe three guys. It's Citrix and VMware, obvious, and Microsoft in some degree. Microsoft is everywhere, by the way, from a licensing perspective and an OS perspective. But Microsoft VDI, as we will explain later, Microsoft VDI is not really, really present, to be honest. I will show some numbers to back up that statement. So this is the question I get often. I wrote a white paper book called VDI Smackdown. Where you have never heard of that book, search for it and you will get all this kind of content plus much more detail in a paper format. And this is the question I received quite often. What is the right solution? So I try to answer that question. And I will give the answer after this 10-minute talk around these topics. So first of all, I'll start with Citrix. And the structures, I will talk about the pros and I will talk about the cons about Citrix, Microsoft, and VMware. Benefits, as we see, is choice. Virtual infrastructure platform, image management platform, both VDI and server-based computing, both Zen Desktop and Zen App, is a benefit. It works awesome, as you've seen in the videos of Benny. From Benny, it works awesome in LAN, WAN, and mobile scenarios. And with the acquisition of FrameHawk a year ago, that will extend somewhere in 2015 and make a big differentiator between VMware and Microsoft. All GPU concepts are supported, and as of today, it's unique with vGPU support and NVIDIA. VMware has an early access program or technical preview with vSphere and NVIDIA, but that will...
Yeah, that's going to take until 2015 until they ship.
Endpoint support is, really extensive. Not that all functionality is supported in all types of endpoints. That could be part of a conversation around thin clients, for instance. And deep integration with, which I call secure access solutions. In their scenario, Netscaler or Netscaler and Access Gateway scenario. That is getting more and more important. Secure access, accessing applications is important. And other vendors are lacking in that space. You will see that later. And both Windows 7 and Windows Server are supported as a guest OS, which is very useful in a desktop as a service scenario because Microsoft is lacking in VDI licensing where you're a service provider. So SPLA, Service Provider Licensing Agreement, with VDI does not exist. So how do I bring desktop as a service to my end users? Use Windows Server OS in certain scenarios could be a scenario for that. Challenges, great platform, but it has its serious price as well. Early adapter from a GPU perspective requires latest hardware. We can write a different book about all the experience we have seen with hardware and GPU and all the challenges we've seen.
What kind of stuff I have in my lab now that costs real lot money and I can't use it anymore. That is a problem.
Complexity. A lot of people in this audience are dealing with Citrix, and I think most of them agree with the term complexity and Citrix. It's their challenge. They have some legacy. They are in this space for a long time, so complexity is involved in that. They try to solve that with different approaches, with FMA, for instance, and combining different platforms in newer platforms. But it is a challenge I see on a daily basis while talking with clients and implementing stuff. And Zen server usage is declining in enterprise. And to back up that statement, again, this diagram, survey question, which hypervisor is currently used in a VDI scenario? And I create a filter to select only the Citrix Zen Desktop customers only. 60% of these Zen Desktop customers are using vSphere. Almost 20% are using Zen Server. Smaller group are using vSphere. Now it gets interesting, because the question,
smaller group is using Hyper-V.
Smaller group is using Hyper-V, sorry, yeah. The other question is, will you introduce a different hypervisor in the next 2-3 years? And a large amount of people, they have no plans for changing hypervisors. Almost 20% is investigating, and almost 17% is seriously considering Hyper-V. We see that as well.
Yeah.
A lot of people are seriously considering Hyper-V or moving to Hyper-V.
Yeah. Hyper-V is growing big time.
But I added something like 75% of the people who filled in and completed this survey are IT pros. When I have a discussion with IT managers about virtualization, Microsoft versus VMware, then the discussion is different. When I have a discussion with IT pros, they love the product mostly. So it's a different discussion with different groups. So keep that in mind when you look at these results. Majority of the people who filled in the survey are IT professionals, and they mostly stick with their platform. Let's shift gears to the Microsoft desktop virtualization solution. I see more and more customers who have a Microsoft-only strategy. And especially when you combine it with other Microsoft solutions like Office 365 with Azure and that whole holistic point of view of all these solutions, people say, well, I'll use just Microsoft from a remote desktop perspective or a remote app perspective. Is that good enough? Well, I'm a Dutch guy, and some other Dutch guys know that as well. It's good enough, why pay more? That's a typical Dutch phrase, actually. So I like that kind of statement, especially in these days. Hyper-V is really growing. And that combined with remote graphics, with remote desktops, is an interesting combination. There is some GPU sharing, as Benny explained in detail. Works good in LAN, WAN, and mobile scenarios, but not as good as Citrix does in WAN scenarios, as Benny explained as well, especially above 15.
Yeah, they're step by step. They're getting there, and they're adding those little tweaks that you can modify the settings so that RemoteFX adapts better and then all that stuff. So Microsoft is working like crazy on that. So about 3 or 4 years ago, I would not have considered using RDP or the early version of RemoteFX for customers in production. Today, It is a feasible solution, absolutely. They're getting there.
And obvious client for OS X, iOS, and Android. It's obvious right now that you need this kind of clients, but this was not the case a year ago. So there is demand, especially for OS X, running MacBooks, managers using a MacBook and want to access remote applications provided by Microsoft. And integrations or enterprise mobility, you see more and more movements with remote app, with identity solutions in this space. So cloud integration, Azure Remote App plus Enterprise Mobility Management is getting more and more traction. That's a good thing. Challenges? Adoption of remote desktop services is low, and there's limited experience in this field. We know this because, we are in the MVP space, and when we asked some questions around, we are searching for some reference customers with, for instance, 1,000-plus CCUs. Who did that?
Who did that? And we're shouting out globally. And it's very interesting. It's a very small number of experts who ever did that. And you always come back to the same people.
Yep.
So within the MVP community, it's literally only 5 who really did that. So typically, they do something with Citrix. They do something with other third-party vendors. But doing a pure Microsoft implementation of an RDS environment, this is a very rare species.
Yeah. And also with Remote App. That's still in the same spot, so keep that in mind.
We'll come back to that later when we do the notes from the field.
So GUI for Management Focus is below 500 users. We'll have a statement from Microsoft about that as well.
Yeah.
So that's not enterprise enterprise for me. OpenGL hardware support is not supported yet. OpenCL 1.1 only, not OpenCL 1.2 and 2.0. Well, keep that in mind with API support. Node pass or GPU or vGPU, as NVIDIA Grid vGPU.
Yeah. We're talking here about the Grid vGPU support.
And very limited integration with secure access solutions. Yes, they have their RD Gateway solution, but that's not always the right solution, and especially in more secure scenarios. And then the answer is, what are the third-party vendors in that space? And it's pretty quiet about that. And web application proxy and all these kind of approaches doesn't work in this type of scenario. So it feels like, secure access is possible with RD Web and RD Gateway, but it fits in smaller environments for sure. But enterprises have different demands.
Even if you look at if Microsoft offers you RDSH from Azure, you have to add some extra building blocks in order to have the secure access from the outside. So not only using the RDS components, they have to add more components to make it a secure access. So Microsoft is learning fast. Azure is really, really beneficial for us now, because now Microsoft has to eat their own dog food, which is great. And I'm really looking forward to everything that's happening now that they're using all that stuff in Azure.
So when I ask the question, which VDI solution is being used? As backup to my first question, what are the majority of vendors in this space? VMware View and Zen Desktop is leading this VDI space right now.
If you combine the two Zen Desktop solutions, Citrix is clearly dominating the market.
Yeah. When I introduced the question, will you change VDI broker in the next 2-3 years? Even a larger group of people is not considering that. So when you don't use VDI or service-based routing right now, spend serious time in investigating the right solution, because it's a long-term commitment.
I mean, 2.6% seriously considering Microsoft? Come on, that could be better.
Exactly. So which product is the best? That's the question to answer. How to make smart decisions in this space is just flip the coin. When you have no clue about requirements. So flip the coin is the solution to make smart decisions when you have no requirements. I've done this in real life in 4 occasions in a customer workshop. Just pick a euro coin. Oh, is that a German one?
You're Dutch. Can I get it back afterwards?
So flip the coin. Ah, I think we'll be VMware this day. And I've done this, as I mentioned. And then I explained, when you have no clue about your requirements and you didn't talk about the business with the business consumers, just flip the coin is the cheapest approach to make the right solution. Otherwise, read the VDI Smackdown. You have a better understanding of all the features. But don't start with features at all. It's not about features. It's about a bigger picture. That's why I started with VDI and VDCry.
Good. The last 10 minutes, let's do some notes from the field, like a recap of what we had before, and this is very interesting. So what did we learn, in particular, about the Microsoft things? And to be very clear, this is, we have it in red to make sure that...
It's orange, by the way.
It's
Dutch orange.
It's Dutch orange. Good. As you can see, documentation is a challenge. Yes, there are articles out there on TechNet, absolutely. But what I'm missing is the real blueprints. the blueprints to build enterprise environments. So we're completely lacking those. The individual components, putting those, oh, thank you, putting the individual components together, that works. So if you look at one of the aspects that makes an entire VDI infrastructure, like if you want to know how AppV works because you want to use AppV within your VDI environment, you find AppV in documentation that is great. But if I want to find a documentation that covers RDS, AppV, policy management, and profile management in a concise way, it's not out there. And this is where the problem starts, because this is the reason why you only have this very limited number of people.
So no reference architecture.
There's no reference architecture. I know that now Dell and Microsoft, they put together their solution.
CPS.
So this is something where they really take all these best practices together. It's interesting to learn how they did it. And it's only supported by Microsoft. There's a good reason for that, because it's extremely hard for somebody else to put that together. Generation 2 VMs are still unsupported in such an environment. And what really bugs me is there is no mix and match of VDI and terminal server environments. You cannot use the desktops from either or and create something like a super collection that includes them all. Even worse, you cannot mix and match server 2008 R2 and 2012 R2 in one collection, which I would also call a super collection, a super server farm. This is not possible. And this makes it very, very hard in enterprise environments to deal with that, because they will not change the versions of all their operating systems in one night. And then they're able to continue with a new collection that only has one version of the operating system.
As I explained, third-party secure access solutions is an integration with the Microsoft stack.
Yeah.
It's tough to find the right solutions. When you have ideas about it, I've tried to find like the Junipers and the F5s in that space. It's tough to find the right solution which really integrates with the Microsoft stack.
And RD Gateway alone is not the security solution, because it must be domain joined, and running a domain joint machine in a DMC is not what some security people want to see in their corporate environments. I know that Microsoft solved it for Azure. They did it, so they know how to do it. The thing is, all this, again, as a blueprint, as a reference architecture, is not available for on-premises solutions so far. PowerShell, whenever we are talking to Microsoft about how to solve things, you can do everything from PowerShell. When I go to my customers and I suggest that they want to use PowerShell, they look at me and their eyes glaze over and say, are you serious?
PowerShell's management solution.
I'm also talking about help desk. I mean, it's about help desk tasks. And you can script everything in PowerShell, but now I want to see this help desk agent who gets an RDS-related call every second day, and immediately he knows the right PowerShell command to fix that, or to change settings, or assign users to applications, or fix the profile stuff. It is impossible. Yes, we can do it. The geeks can do it. But unfortunately, our customers can't. So if we leave them alone with that kind of solutions, they will fail, simply fail. There are no dedicated RDS management and monitoring tools. So I wish I had something that shows me what is going on in my RDS environment. Configuring System Center to do that is painful. And again, no blueprints available how to do that. So yes, if you are an expert in System Center and in RDS, you can do that. We are doing that within our organization, so we have the experts who can do that. But it is painful to get there. As I said, there's no integration for AppV and UEV and roaming profile management, and if you add policy management and group policy preferences. So I wish I had something that was able to do that. And in my wet dreams, I want to have an Azure Pack user interface with snap-ins and plug-ins that allow me to build something that so that I can manage a larger RDS environment with 1,000 and more users.
That's a nice dream.
Oh yeah, that's the dream that I'm having. And well, here you see the SCVMM for video, host, and image management. It is painful. And image management in particular, Microsoft still relies on SysPrep And those mechanisms, when creating images and delta images, the thing is that the IOPS that are generated when doing that, this is massive. Other vendors have different solutions. And the thing is that the scalability is very limited as long as you're using the good old SysPrep mechanism and creating delta images to scale out your VDI environment. So I wish that there was a better solution to do that, to keep the IOPS lower. You can do many things on the Terminus server platform, and we learned that yesterday in the session about hosting the Terminus server, the RDSH environments on Azure. So because they did login VSI testing, and they came out that they only require like 2 IOPS per user in such an environment. I have my serious doubt that with an RDVH environment, you could limit it down to such a small number of IOPS. So that would massively go up. And this prevents me from deploying successful Microsoft-only VDI environments, unfortunately. So no SCVMM can help me with that. So it just manages those images and those VMs that are already there. So this is a real challenge. We still have an incomplete range of supported client platforms. I know that the client for Windows Phone is almost there, but unfortunately it's not.
For the 10 people are using Windows Phone?
Well, I'm using Windows Phone, and you're using Windows Phone, so we're the two who are doing that. And I wish I could have a good RDP client on my Windows Phone, not to do production stuff, but just to look at some applications. So it's still lacking.
What I find challenging as well is that feature function differences between clients is not always, well, equal.
Yes, yeah, that's true.
So with Windows Client 10 and OpenGL, the main question is, okay, is that supported, for instance, on Windows 7 and Windows 8? Yeah. That's an interesting question.
But that's gonna be hard. It's also hard for Citrix to keep track of that. So they have the broadest range of supported clients, and sometimes it's a nightmare to find out what kind of features are supported on one client and what is not supported on the other client. And the other thing is, there's no way for us to find out when client and server connect and they negotiate about the capabilities, what the result is. There's no monitoring tool that tells me, hey, when this client connects to my session host or to my virtualization host, this is the result that defines what kind of media is redirected and what kind of protocol to use. If we use UDP or TCP, it's extremely hard to find out what the result was. That makes it hard to troubleshoot. So you have 2 identical machines sitting next to each other, remoting into the same infrastructure, and the performance is different on the 2 machines. And you can't find out why. In the end, it's probably 1 DLL that's different. So the negotiation at the connection time, it delivers a different result. And so the performance is different, but we have no way of finding out what it is. So pooled VDI with multiple differencing disks is a challenge. We don't have pass-through GPU and the NVIDIA grid vGPU that we said before. The management capabilities, I covered that. There's one more management capability that I wish was better: printing.
Yep.
XPS printing, this is something that was introduced.
Easy print.
That was introduced, I think, with Server 2012 or 2008 R2.
Yeah.
So it's a great concept. Unfortunately, it's extremely hard to manage. And it's, again, one of these things that I wish were in these a management front end that I can use in a Microsoft-only environment. Yeah, there are some things that we find out when we're doing projects. Don't clone RDSH images with certificates. If you use SSO, that's not going to work. Don't use change log on disable. Rather, drain your users from the system. That is nicer. Instead of locking down the log on, this typically will fail. The GPU GPOs to set server group membership, that reduces issues massively, so please use them. and load balancing based on GPIO and weight. So if you want to have additional load balancing logic built in the system, you have to build your own component that does it. So I wish that there was a little bit more flexibility like the other vendors do have. So this requires me for many customers to get a third-party load balancer that works nicely with RDSH and RDVH. So this is something that the third-party vendors like, but I wish that would come directly from Microsoft.
To summarize, the documentation, information, not really. User experience with RemoteFX.
Great.
Great. Admin experience, meh. Small and medium enterprise ready, yes.
Yes.
Enterprise ready, no.
Nope. That's unfortunately not. I hope these things will change. Now, this is a cool thing, a cool statement by Klaus Langhout. Because I said to him, hey, what is the guidance? What would you tell your sales guys regarding that topic, using Microsoft only in the enterprise? And he made a very clear statement that in the enterprise, it's rather Citrix plus Microsoft as the best solution as of today, because they still have some limitations. So that is the official requirement. Good. There's one last thing.
So in total, we have 5 different SmackDown white papers. And this fifth one, this one, is available. We have a couple of hard copies. When you have access to the PDF, which covers like everything plus more we talked about, send us an email to this email address. Give it a name, GoVDI or another fancy subject.
So you get that book for free. You get the PDF.
But also storage white papers, storage blog articles, some notes from the field. One of my colleagues did some blog posts around that. So send us an email, rsp@pqr.nl, govdi, and I will follow up. Not today. It's my anniversary, so tomorrow probably or in the weekend, and then we'll give you more info.
Fill in the eval form. There are more tracks, but they're almost over. Where are the eval form things? Here it is, evaluate the session. Please, please, please help us to make this thing better. And that's all.
Cool.
That's all. Okay.
Awesome.
Yay. We've done it. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.